Daddy, we live in the dream, got dead in the field. I'm a Madrid like Champions League. Every 25 hits, even the only feet. Man, I'm about to be rolled like a Ferrari. We gotta go on, this is the love of the tweet. Create my own leagues, I hope we compete.
Running, although here's Canapri, he's on a hat-trick and he's in.
Champions League, this is Corner Flag Talk.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode on the Corner Flag Talk podcast. It's your boy John. As always, we are here to discuss the latest in football with you. We are assuming Brandon coming. If he show up, he show up. If not, we have Virgil. Uzi was a good, my guy.
Yeah, no idea, children. I was excited to talk about a little football.
Uzi, I promise, yeah? I have something to say this pod that you wouldn't expect to come from me. And that you're very
lucky. Okay.
Right? But when we reach there, obviously. All right. Right? And then we have Pat. Pat, what's good, my guy?
Good as always, dog. Happy to be back.
So, we got Yuan to say that he was coming because, as you all know, Yuan waited until they actually won a game again against somebody that he actually could have bragged against to come. But allegedly, his throat is sore from all the celebrations, because we all know the Carabao Cup is the one thing everybody dreams and desires, or so the United fan tells us. But with that being said, you see, this is why I wanted Brandon here from the start. Okay, we got to talk about Liverpool versus Chelsea, then we should probably have a Chelsea fan here. So what we'll do is, what the plan was to talk about that and then jump into Liverpool's title rivals. So what we'll do, we'll do it in reverse. Yeah. So this weekend, my mind blank. Yeah. Bournemouth hosted Manchester City this weekend and they won 1-0 through a Phil Foden goal as they managed to keep eking away these one goal wins, being as annoying as they can be, despite having moments where they could be a little sus defensive. I think one of the most surprising things that come out of this run, not just these two games, but these last few games, obviously, including the draw against Chelsea, the game against Brentford, even the game before that against Brentford, is Haller's lack of profilacy in front of goal right now. And it just is completely uncharacteristic of him. Obviously, everybody misses chances, even the best striker in the world. But even at this rate, it is surprising. And so, the thing that I would have had to say, Virgil, is that I think Phil Foden has probably been one of the most, if not the most important player for City this season. And, you know, my complaints or criticisms, rather, of him has always been, it's not a talent issue, but it is an impact and a consistency issue from him. And I think that this has been the most consistent we've seen from him. And not just in terms of quality of output, because, I mean, like, be really go, like, the weekend was not the highest quality, but in terms of consistency of performances. You know, I think that we are seeing a string of, not just games, but a few weeks of where that he puts in some good performances, and even coming more centrally to do so. Stuff that was also criticized of him in the past, if he was really built to play in the middle. And I think that it has been said already that this has been his best season so far for Man City, and I would agree with that. But I think even more importantly so, is the next thing I was going to say is that Man City would not still be in this title race if it was not for him this season. You know, the amount of games that they've had where he's either scored the winner, he's assisted the winner, or he has created the play that has resulted in the winner has been to a level in which we have praised KDB for in the past. If this is a carry out throughout the whole season, I think you have a PFA Player of the Year conversation to be had with him. I would be probably his first season, I would say, that he's played at this level. Yeah. And it deserves to be commended. So, and again, in some, I'm not really sure if it is optional KDB absence, because I think KDB probably carrying something, and that is why he's not starting right now. But in KDB's not being available at 100% level, he's doing this, which is, again, a void we asked him to step him into. So,
because looking at this from the neutral point of view, I could understand it. But, like, obviously for me, there were moments, I would even say from like 3 seasons ago, that you'll find that, you know, Foden was stepping up. But from what many people responded to that. They said that, remember, he had the likes of Riyad Mahrez next to him. Then he had the likes of De Bruyne also chipping in. And then, obviously, Sterling was there. And now, there were always those people who were above him in talent that could always, you know, bail him out if things not going too well, and obviously make his chances way more easier than it needs to be. But like, especially for a game like this and a lineup like this, where looking at everybody, Foden is probably one there with the most experience alongside Bernardo Silva in that lineup, because he had the likes of Kovacic, Nunes. Well, you know, and it just covers as Nunes, we had Bernardo there. But when you're looking at that, obviously, if Haaland is not giving you any goals on the end product, the next place you will look at is Foden, because the likes of De Bruyne on the bench have no Grealish. Foden compared to Doku, Foden have way more experience in the City team compared to Doku. So these are the moments where you needed Foden to step up, and especially how the season was going with De Bruyne out and everything I mentioned before. You know, this is a perfect time for Foden to step up. And, you know, although I'm not surprised by the outcome and surprised by what we're seeing from Foden right now, it's just good that he could put all this down and do it, as I said, at a consistent level, and he's doing it consistently. So, you know, right now he have that spotlight on him, and he actually, you know, stepping up to the pressure and handling it well.
Yeah, Bran, you good?
No, did you not see what happened earlier today? But definitely not in the best of moods today.
Yeah, well, I was trying to bring you on to be here with you, but
it's a good thing you didn't, to be honest.
No, well, I thought only would I have a little chance to hit off going at it and see who could have been the bigger hater. But I'm not going to you yet. I actually want to go to Daniel, because obviously, you're a big Phil Foden fan yourself, but I only can get like maybe like 25, 30 seconds to talk about it. And then I want to ask you if you are concerned with what we've been seeing from Haaland recently in terms of his prophecy in front of goal. Do you take his, I don't know, any kind of return to some median or just a rough patch? And he can just kill off teams for the next game going forward.
Okay. About Phil Foden, me personally, been very impressed with the standard that he's been able to show across the season. Again, I don't have much time, so I'm not going to get into it, but I would say he might be one of the best players in the league at playing on the half turn. I'll just say that. Apart from that, though, highly technical, highly gifted player, and I'm just happy that finally, you know, coming to fruition, where like he's had, I would say, a significant string of games of being the guy, you know. So yeah, me personally, as a Foden fan, I'm happy to see that. Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised, because I thought it could have been shaky at the start of the season, given how last season and season before went. But I'm just glad that I'm clicking. Hopefully one day we could talk more about it and actually analyze his game, because I do feel like it have a lot in his game to talk about. He is probably one of the most technical players, I think, in this league. So yeah, I would love to analyze his game one day on this pod. Haaland, I firmly believe that goal scoring is a thing about rhythm. And I feel like his rhythm just got broken with the injury, if you see what I'm saying. I believe that. I'm also happy that he experiencing this, because this is probably a first for him. Feeling like he can't score for shit, you know? Like he just can't score. Am I worried? No. I do believe that he'll be doing a lot of things in the background to try to get back into that rhythm and habit of finishing consistency. I would be more worried if he wasn't getting chances, but this man is getting over 1 XG in most games. You know what I mean? He is getting a lot of good, he's getting a lot of high quality chances. He is simply missing. I do believe that as long as he's able to find some rhythm, it literally takes, I'll put it like this, it takes 2 games where he could score back-to-back, and I think he's back. And I definitely think that could happen. Maybe it might be United, maybe it won't be, might be the game after that. But let him score today and tomorrow, if you kind of understand what I'm saying. Yeah. Then him scoring two games back to back, and I really think he's back because they're finding him, dog. He's just not finishing. I think that's a smaller problem than if he wasn't getting chances at all.
Yeah, nice. So, like, coming up, they have Manchester United. They hosting them, obviously. Then they go to the Etihad, go to Brighton, host Arsenal, host Aston Villa, and go away to Crystal Palace, host Luton, and then go away to Spurs. Obviously, not all those are tricky fixtures in there. United in the last few years weirdly have a better record than the Etihad. Obviously, Pep has only won once in at Liverpool. Lost away to Brighton last year. Have not beaten Arsenal twice this year. Do you have any concerns at all in this run for them, given, you know, that they aren't at their post-profilic best? They are giving up chances in the back line as well. Any kind of worry at all?
Yeah, a little bit. I feel like once, ever since the Chelsea game, I've been more and more concerned about City. I feel like the I think you said Arsenal and Aston Villa back to back, right?
Yeah.
It was that one is tough. That one is real tough. And then you have Spurs though. And only time we know Spurs is a bogey team for City. So yeah, if I was a City fan, I would be a little bit concerned. Considering that Liverpool won today. Considering Arsenal in the league looked very good, so yeah, I'd be a little concerned, but you know, I would not be confident going into most of the games. So.
Yeah, fair. As we close off on this, I have to ask you then, Virgil, how are you feeling then as a City fan going into these fixtures? Mm-hmm. I mean, to be fair, if, you know, United literally lost yesterday in one of the funniest ways they could lose. But besides that, you're playing some teams that are in pretty decent form. Obviously, Liverpool, Arsenal, Aston Villa seem to be picking back up themselves. Mm-hmm. Brighton, lost yesterday, I think. But they were on a pretty decent run upwards as well. So, yeah, any concerns at all? Any worries? Or you feel this is just like something you're taking game by game?
It definitely is something that I want them to take game by game. I'm looking at how, you know, those unfavorable results happen early in the season. I kind of trying to build a little, you know, a little confidence of that and hoping that the players recognize that, you know, there were points in times where they could have extended the league, they could have claimed top spot, but, you know, little errors happen that kind of cause them to slip in the title race and have them where they are right now. And also seeing that these teams now are right there in the top four, and also title, you know, title challengers. I really hope that they're taking it game by game, really. And I really hope that there's something that Pep, this is something that Pep have to be working over time for to try and figure out. Because if you're looking at all the games, like at all those teams, that yeah, some of them may be tricky, some may be straight up difficult, but the play styles of them are very different. So it's something that he's going to have to monitor game by game. So I was kind of glad with how he experimented a little bit with the formation and everything for this Bournemouth game. Because even before this game, Bournemouth is a team that we all struggle against. If you see from this game, Bournemouth had like, what, 3 shots less than us in this game. And I was surprised we came out with a clean sheet. But going into those other trickier games going forward, you know, those much tougher teams. And the ones who are in title challenge for us and the ones who are in top 6. Yeah, it's not something I can sit on here and say that, you know, our confidence. Something I could hope it's game by game, and I hope we could build that confidence as the game weeks continue.
Yeah. Obviously, the big one is obviously going to Anfield. Yep. You know, way like I say, ever since that Liverpool have become title rivals, the City they have not won there. That's the closest your game was when Mahrez missed the pen when it was 0-0. But yeah, and even last year when Liverpool weren't at their best, they still managed to beat you. So, you know, obviously, like Sally pointed out with Spurs, you know, there's just some places that some teams just struggle even at their best, you know. Given that we're doing this in reverse order, then we'll go on to Arsenal, and then we will circle back to the Carabao Cup final. And so, Obviously, Arsenal won 4-1 in the league this week. And, you know, based on recent league results, that seems like it just kind of has become the start of the school for them. And I think the bigger talking point is talking about how things went in midweek in Europe for them. But, you know, just quickly on in the league, you know, there's 5 games in a row that, that Saka has scored. It is continuing to be this run of games where they seem to be free-flowing, at least within the league. And, you know, while there are different types of pressures to face within the league, there's also the type where, you know, when teams don't seem to be falling away, you know, you have to make sure that you still have your foot on the gas going behind them. And even when, you know, City win earlier in the day and Liverpool already put themselves 5 points ahead, obviously, with a game in hand during midweek, that you have to keep going. And against a team where, obviously, they felt robbed, I think, fairly when they played them earlier in the season, they made Sean put them to the sword on the day. Something that I want to point out is, look, I get that he's not the most pleasing on the eye, but whether we like it or not, that you know, Havertz has managed to find a way to make himself impactful and effective in these games. I get that, you know, that he doesn't strike the ball as cleanly as I would like, or pass the ball with the right way that I would like, especially when he plays in midfield. But, you know, he constantly unsettles defenders. He movement is always a problem. And, you know, I would like to think that at least from a neutral perspective, that we could at least admit that, you know, even if he isn't always the most perfect fit, especially in midfield, you know, I think Jorginho shows that as well, that he has become an asset in a team that is fighting for the league. And that says something, you know, at least for where his rep was, you know, coming into this Arsenal team where he was underperforming, you know, during his time at Chelsea. Anybody have anything they want to add?
Yeah.
It about the league more specifically though. And then again, I'll bring up the Porto game as well.
Oh no, no.
Brian?
Yeah, but I could get spy though.
No, I don't really have any. This year I have a 23 game tree.
Okay. Well, respect to Europe, I'll be honest, Dolly. Obviously, I don't think that we played well, right? We didn't even have a single shot on target. Yeah. But, you know, I don't expect going away to any of these teams to be easy, right? And they played, obviously, really deep and whatever, right? I was cool with it being 0-0. Because, like, it just felt like neither team really were trying to attack. And then a really bad... Declan Rice tried to cross to the top of the box, which was truly great. And then Martelli tried to release the ball very early and get cut off. And then Galeno, who has a ton of returns in the group stage, managed to bury us in the end. And so it does give us a mountain to climb. I think I do get people that would say things like, you know, the inexperience. But I think that moment, the inexperience did show, you know, because I do think that and then the result was fine. Was more than good even, you know. Like, as much as you prefer to win, obviously, and go back to home with the aggregate in your hand, I think the little away from home is fine. And if you can't handle beating them at home, then you don't deserve to be in this competition. Whether it's Porto or whoever else it may be. You know, if you can't beat these teams at home, then you don't deserve to be there, right? But I do think that the immaturity showed a bit in that moment. I think to that point, I was okay with how things went, that we wouldn't try to take too many risks in the tie. You know, I let that, not just the tie get away from us, but for the stadium to get loud and for them to get momentum and stuff like that. And I was okay with it to that point. But teams in Europe have quality everywhere we go. And one moment of lapse in judgment cost us that we have to go back at home and rectify these things now. Now, given Arsenal's past, it doesn't look that good. Admittedly, though, in those cases, it's been very shamefully instances where the scoreline is a lot deeper. It was we had over to 3 goal deficits and stuff like that, thanks Monaco, and Barca, and AC Milan, and Bayern. So this is a little bit more doable. And if we don't think that we could beat them by at least 2 goals at home, we don't deserve to be here. really and truly. He can slip up one, concede one. That not ideal, but it could happen. If we can't beat them by 2 goals or more in the home tie, we don't deserve to be here. I told Brandon ahead of the tie that I thought Jorginho was going to start. I think those games, and I think this weekend should again, why that he should start these games. These games where we don't just need that extra presence in terms of control, but I think that he adds, again, a maturity to the team that knows when to make certain passes. And I think that he comforts a lot of the team as well. You know, knowing that he's always available and always ready to receive and always will make the right decisions on the ball. Even though I actually think on Saturday he made some bad decisions early in the game on the ball. But just that trust in him and his experience of being there and winning the, you know, whether it was winning Euros or winning the Champions League or whatever it may be. So, yeah. Brandon, you have anything to say about the Champions League tie with Arsenal?
Yeah, that was one of the worst games I think Arsenal played for the entire season. I think it was worse than the Newcastle game that was overshadowed by whether the ball was in or out. Between those two, I think those are some of the worst games I saw for everybody. I can't name you one Arsenal player I thought was great in that game. So, yeah, I just want to say big up to John's friend who's a Porto fan. Big up to him. Obrigado, my friend. You stay at John in the wrong direction. So, yeah, you stay at John in the wrong direction. So, well done. But, yeah, again, you can't count out any of those teams, boy. You never know what can happen. And Arsenal after all to do it to me in the second leg. I mean, this is funny that this actually happened, John, because I think this is two pods in between where I and one I wasn't on, and I told you about this Jorginho thing. I didn't explain it to Daniel, but so basically it's like Jorginho, if you give him the right environment to thrive, you get one of the top five midfielders in the world. And so basically, if you look at Jorginho's career, every time he's been very good, he's always had like the same type of player next to him. So when he was at Napoli, it was Alan. When it was Chelsea, it was Kante. And now he's at Arsenal, is Rice. So if you're able to play Jorginho next to Rice, you get the best version of Jorginho. And I think like the sooner Arteta continues to play him regularly, especially at this stage of the season, that is all he needs to do, because they have to play control. And when it comes to controlling a game, you want no better player in the world than Jorginho. And you have a player to cover him in Rice, who's already one of the best players in the world. You're looking at a great team right there. So again, I think Arteta got it wrong. I think Ole went in with the wrong mentality into that game. And it cost you in the end, but you know, you never know what can happen. In 13 days is a long time in football. You never know what can happen. You could lose a player or two. So I don't think it was the right mentality, but hopefully for Arsenal, they had to score two goals. They had to score two goals. I don't think you want extra time in the Emirates, so you had to score two goals.
No. Yeah, I totally agree. And like I do think like Arteta's plan for this, like, now to be fair, Brandon, is that I do know that since the Liverpool game, Jorginho, I know you don't necessarily like this kind of thing, but Jorginho has had an injury and he has been on the bench but hasn't been totally fit there. And I don't think like he thought that he could have played both the Porto game and the Newcastle game.
I don't think Johnny didn't need him for the Newcastle game. I'm glad you say that, because he didn't need him for the Newcastle game.
I don't know why.
Bro, come on, be for real, please. Porto and Newcastle. Have you seen Newcastle this season?
Yeah, I do get that in there, but I don't mean that we didn't need it. Like, because he was my match weekend, you know? I can't see that somebody who's going to be match. But I don't think somebody who was man in match night game can say that they didn't need him. I don't think that's fair, you know. And I think that an ideal world, but to be fair, an ideal world that the fellow who's been number five could have be fit and play at least some part in these games. But apparently he's never fit, and I think that is where I think the plan probably was for these bigger games was to play, you know, really party and race together, you know. And well, at this point, well, I don't even want party to play over Jorginho, because look at how good Jorginho is playing these games. And even though you won't need Jorginho for when you're playing Burnley and West Ham, yeah, I take every game of that stature of Porto, you know, Champions League knockouts and the bigger games and the more intense games and stuff like that. Yeah, I definitely wanted to play. Pat, you have anything to say?
No, I'm just glad Jorginho getting his flowers because I used to defend that man back in Chelsea. So, but granted, that was, I used to have to defend him off to Takri. So, yeah, Takri, if you're listening, maybe, maybe not, but yeah, shout out to you. But yeah, just glad Jorginho getting his flowers. Everything Brandon said, I fully agree. He is a Pirlo wannabe. He is that, that is what Jorginho is. He will never be that good, but you have to set up the team as you would if you had Pirlo in your team.
Yeah.
I don't know if that explains it well.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I don't think being a Pirlo wannabe is a bad thing. You know, when you're talking about somebody who's one of the greatest ever. You know? So, yeah. You want to say anything, Butch, before we go to the Carabao Cup final?
I just want to add this because I want to wait till when did the whole Porto talk and everything, going back to what you mentioned with Havertz and everything. Because looking at that Porto game and looking at the Newcastle game, was I surprised Arsenal won that game that type of way? No, because Newcastle not really the best form right now. But when you're looking at that, and from what you mentioned for Havertz, for one thing I was thinking of, I was like, it's not just what single out Havertz, but you're looking at a game like that, where Arsenal has three European winners in the midfield, midfield options, in Havertz, Jorginho, and Rice. And I felt like just looking at that game, I was like,
Technically Odegaard
as well.
Let's not play all of them, Arteta. Let's not play all of them.
It's like, you're looking at this, and yeah, I don't really feel the Porto results are that bad of a result, even for Newcastle, not surprising. But the whole thing with Havertz, and this is where it comes in. Arsenal have those quality players, and it just seems that we would go above and beyond to defend them. And I feel like the fact that we have to go above and beyond to defend them shows that, Dan, y'all are at a level where we shouldn't have to defend all year. So it's like when Jorginho gets the opportunity to step in and makes these man performances, and Havertz at this point still, when you look at Havertz is a man that looks like he just getting by. And for some, and it's workout. Don't get me wrong, it's workout. Like, that's one player that looks like he's get by and it's workout. But It just good to like compare the two situations, compare the Porto game, compare the Newcastle game, and compare what you expect of these type of players that Arsenal have. Because at that point in time, where I feel like not only the team but some of the players is kind of a little more difficult than it needs to be for them. But you know, but just it's a good result for the Newcastle game and for the Porto game. Am I confident that Arsenal could turn the wrong Emirates? Yeah. Do I care?
Yeah,
do I care if they turn the wrong in the Emirates? That's too much.
Well, we don't. Look, I am not disagreeing with that, and I do think that it has been, at least earlier in the season, I think there was a lot of squinting to try and see the good in Havertz, right, and really force it. I'm not denying that, but I do think that over the last few months it has been a notch better than that. Now I don't think that it has always been great. And I do think that there are games that you don't get by playing somebody like him in midfield, because he doesn't offer what somebody like Jorginho or in the past like Xhaka would have offered in terms of build up. And you need that more in those games, you know? But then in those games, he showed his usefulness in other areas when he goes plays on top. And while his finishing is abhorrent at times, you know, he is a very chaotic element when he plays in the front line, you know? And the other day, he got one of the best centre backs in the league this season sent off, you know. And I guess Newcastle as well, the men couldn't see their way. And I don't think that those things are coincidence. Again, I totally agree. The man is not easy on the eye at all. His technique leaves a lot to be desired. But there's a lot of situations that he works. And I don't think that that is by coincidence. And you know, no matter what your perception is of Arteta, he is one of the most meticulous managers in having the league, and have to have a reason that he wanted. And even if it wasn't him, you know, like we say that we were starting Smith Rowe in these games, and obviously he's a different player, but he is not like Jorginho either. And I think that the same problems that we had against Porto would have still be there. I think that type of player that Jorginho is and what he offers You would have need you needed that in those games. And you know, we played Burnley last week, I think it was Saturday, I believe it was. And after the game, I told Brandon, I was like, yeah, I expect Georgie to start. I was hoping that he did start. And it was a bad call by Arteta, and he has to rectify it in 3 weeks, you know. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to have a lot of players back by then. Jesus was actually on the bench yesterday. So he should be fitter by then, hopefully, with God willing. No relapses, and obviously this season he's been really good for us in Europe. And we'll need more of that, as well as other players coming back as well. I believe Partey, Zinchenko, and Tomiyasu are all supposed to be close, but God alone knows. Right. Carabao Cup time. So, in the end, it was 1-0 to Liverpool's under-23s versus Chelsea. Yeah. Actually, no, I'll just leave it there. Brandon, what's up?
Well, I kind of actually start with me first, because there's so many better things you could start with. Like, you could start with Liverpool talking about how they were exceptional today. I thought this is how I described the game, right? And on it is how
I
build.
And I want to hear. I really want to hear.
Cole Palmer had a point blank shot straight at goal.
Mm-hmm.
Conor Gallagher had a shot that he sent straight into Kelleher.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other one? Sterling had a goal ruled out because Jackson was just offside.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's 3 shots for Chelsea, right? Mm-hmm. Let me give you 3 shots of Virgil van Dijk today, right? 1, he forced a save out of Petrovic. 2, he scored an offside goal. And 3, he scored the game winner. And that's 3 shots from one player compared to 1 shot from 3 other players who played attacking positions for us today. This is the level of team that we are talking about here. People told me all day today that Liverpool were underdogs for this game. And in my mind, I can't begin to understand why, when you have players like Virgil van Dijk in your team, and who's a world-class player, and Chelsea have 0 of that in their team.
Mm.
Chelsea had better chances today, yes, but I never once felt that Liverpool would not have... even if we scored 2, I had no doubt that Liverpool were coming back into the game. It was just their final. I thought Robertson was exceptional today. Like, he was great today. Another world-class level player that we talk about all the time. That's what defined it. And this is a great example of why world-class players win things. Because that is what exactly happened today. Van Dijk took the game by the scruff of the neck. And he said, you know what? We're not losing this game today. I have nothing good to say about Chelsea. I have nothing good to say about our manager. Took off Sterling after 60 minutes.
Your feeling is then that, like, even if, like, one of the Gallagher, whoever the chances went in, that they would have just come back somewhere.
Yeah, bro, it is a mentality thing. It is a mentality thing, because Poch went into... all of you all watched the game, I assume that. But when we went into extra time, there was just no urgency. It felt like we were playing for penalties. It literally felt like that. And I don't know why their youngest players were on the pitch at that point, so I don't get why he would have done. I don't know why he took off Chilwell. I don't know, because Chilwell is a good penalty taker. It just didn't make any sense taking off Sterling, and then, you know, like, he also took off Jackson.
That confused me so much.
He kept Gallagher on to take him off in extra time, which I just didn't get either. So I mean, it was a total train wreck for me. You know, big ups Liverpool. They played really well. I think all their players played really well today. I want to shout out Endo. Endo was great today. Again, proves to be one of the signings of the season. I have nothing better good to say about Liverpool. I have a thousand terrible things to say about Chelsea today, but we don't have enough time for that.
Big up Jadon Dance for Liverpool. Come on, I look pretty good. And Brandon had said earlier in the group chat something to the effect of, you know, you'll just correct me wherever I say wrong, Brandon. But, you know, when your team have a certain level of seriousness about you, maturity above you, it does start to perpetuate throughout the squad and throughout the club. And then you see these young players come on and they start to emulate that same energy because the senior players set that tone. And Jadon Dance was an example of that. You know, he came on and he was fantastic for them on the day. So, stat time, guys. Liverpool have the most goal contributions of any Premier League team in all competitions off the bench. The second is Arsenal. Mm-hmm. I want you all to guess how much Liverpool have and then how much Arsenal have.
Liverpool have like 40, right?
You is no fun, though.
No, I'm asking, is it like 40?
Yes.
Okay,
what? And how much do I think Arsenal have? This have nothing to do with Arsenal. What are they watching? The chasm between them and the rest.
29?
I was going to 17.
Too high.
29 is too high?
29 is too high.
14.
Not like ridiculously 23? Too high. But
23?
A little too
LeBron?
High.
LeBron?
What is it, 22?
22. Oh, so geez. They have 18 more goal contributions than any other team off the bench.
Yeah.
Which is why I was so fit in that Trossard came off the bench to score against them. But it says a lot of how the squad has been playing and how much, you know, players have been coming in and not just impacting them off the bench in games, but even coming off and impacting them, you know, when they have so much injuries. Because, I mean, they went into this game, right, with so many players missing. I just can't get the injury list up here for Liverpool. Because, you know, they went into this game. If you watch the bench, there was no attackers that you recognize. You know, Jayden Downs came off. He was on a 23 player. You know, nobody actually, well, no non-Liverpool fan would have known most of this bench, right? In terms of injured players, Alisson Becker, hamstring, Outel March, Doak, I can't even put up. Early April, Jones, ankle, mid-match, Nunes, muscle injury, Jota, knee injury, Soboslai, hair flickage, I mean illness, Matip, cruciate ligament, Salah, hamstring, Bajetic, dog, I didn't even feel like we see this man for the season. Calf injury, Thiago, unknown, Alexander Arnold, knee injury.
Mm-hmm. Unknown is crazy.
They still managed to win that final. So then, you know, I have to ask then, Virgil, what does that say about Chelsea?
Hey, boy. Chelsea looks like...
Don't be nice, eh? I just tell you, don't be nice.
I feel like one person, and obviously, and I'm not just singling him out because everybody else was terrible, but just looking at Enzo Fernandez for the entire game and just seeing how straightforward that game could have been in the first half and how them Chelsea players decided they literally have the PS5 controller and have four options and they will decide to find a fifth option that'll be the worst option ever. I'm like, dog, is there, it literally seems like there's no chemistry in the team. It literally seems like they don't know what's going on and in that game. First half, don't get me wrong, I was expecting, okay, things wasn't so bad. I find Chelsea looking all right. And then after when I realized, this Chelsea side literally playing for extra time, and this Chelsea side, it seemed like they're trying to do a snatch and grab at a point. Then they say they want to going to play for extra time, and then after when extra time started, and I saw then I realized, wait, Sterling came off so early. If this game was going to extra time, why make the decision? So I had to assume, that's why I automatically assumed they was playing for penalties. And then after just seeing those names, and they obviously made mention to the young players and all these names throughout the game, you honestly had to stop and catch yourself. I was like, realistically, this Liverpool team is just a set of kids. And Chelsea have some young players, but Chelsea side have no excuse to not look at us and be like, this is the best chance we have to get a trophy this season. And I believe that'll be for guaranteed Conference League. They could push and get that. And them youth men look world class compared to that Chelsea side was just a comedy show to watch, boy, honestly.
But also, Brandon, it has something in Jackson contract that like he had to stay on beyond stealing and all that, man, or something.
Don't know, bro.
I was so surprised because
Iman was playing so bad today, and I get wanted to bring on Nkunku. Shucks, I would have wanted Nkunku to start. Apparently, Nkunku not allowed to start games or something. But I think of Sterling, and like at least Sterling was actually maintaining the ball and making good runs and stuff like that. Like I mean, I really like Cole Palmer, but he wasn't having a good game today either. I had to think of the one attacker who was actually looking semi-decent and who have experience winning these finals and think mine.
And the only one that put the ball in the net.
Sterling was pulling the attack together. If like, you know for a fact Sterling was an outlet. So taking him off is like, you just have a lot of players up there who did not, they don't know where the goal going to come from. You don't know where any build the play going to come from.
You know the thing, right? I poke my fun at Emery. You know, for throwing away games mid-game and thing, mostly because of that is my experience with man, right? And I have seen some tendencies to that fella. I low-key thought that was gonna happen this weekend, but regardless,
come on, man.
Poch is literally doing that, and he has been doing that. Like I think Poch statistically has the most games thrown away mid-game this season. Like, obviously, it's a start for that, but. Like, when we watch how that City-Chelsea game was going, right, we all have already acknowledged that, yes, Chelsea were riding their luck handed to Haaland, missed chances, but obviously Chelsea were putting in a violent effort. And then it was Poch changes that swung it from Chelsea being dangerous on the counter to Chelsea trying to sit this out for the last few minutes, but then you really realize it was 35 minutes remaining in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, and it's the manager that caused it to sound the shock. Patrick, I know you didn't get to catch the game, right? But in terms of, you know, you and I get to watch the tea leaves after. Watch how young the Liverpool side had finished. You know, obviously Gravin was injured and stuff like that. How you feel? This should have been Chelsea high point for this season then. And then maybe could have had a following high point if they went on fire in the FA Cup as well. You know?
Yeah.
So how you feeling about Chelsea?
I mean, Liverpool? I think it's definitely a missed opportunity for Poch. Because given the state that that Liverpool entered this game in, I could see why someone would call them the underdog. But I also understand Brandon's point of view, where it's like, look, it's Chelsea versus Liverpool. Like, not that hard to call. You know what I mean? No disrespect, but you see what I'm saying, right? It's definitely a missed opportunity for Poch. I don't think he will experience going into our finals against a team that's this depleted maybe ever again in his career. If his career lasts much longer. That's not something that he might get to experience. Another thing, though, that I would say, again, did not watch the game, but it seems like he missed the opportunity to really press the gas from the get-go today. This is, again, an inexperienced team going into a final. And I don't care what you have to say about Carabao Cup or... You know, it could be TT Pro League final. Exactly. Right? It could be, you know, I don't even know what to say about that. But
foot champs final.
Anyway, could be foot champs finals trophy. Yeah. But it could be the Mr. Hoyt trophy, you know. But
hey,
it matters, Mr. you know. RIP for sure. RIP for sure.
Like, we're talking about now. That was our PE teacher in
PE teacher in prayers.
A legend though.
Mm. Yeah. But but what I'm trying to say is that there's a different aura when you go into our finals. I'm sure some of them youths was probably a little shaken up and whatnot. And yeah, I really think Chelsea, it seems like they missed the opportunity to press the gas from the beginning. Mm. At least, you know what, dog? I would say it like this, right? This is what I always tell people. If you're going to fail with some confidence now. Okay? Try to win the game and fail trying at... I don't know how to articulate that any better, but that's basically what I'm trying to say. The whole play for the draw thing, I really think that is not what was required today. It is a missed opportunity for sure. I think that's the theme of what I'm trying to say. Moving on now, looking forward, It's really not looking too good for Chelsea. It's not looking too good for Poch.
I mean, they have a cup tie Wednesday, so that's something.
What I want to say is that if we were to look at this from a macro point of view, you know, like kind of zoom out a little bit and really look at what is happening with Chelsea right now, it's been a concerning string of years for this team, I would say. I think they're dealing with a lot of sins of the past. And then what happened with Abramovich was definitely unfortunate for the club. But I know that shaped things up too. But it's like, the more time that passes, the harder it becomes to fix this team. And I genuinely don't know, because most of the times I have comments on how a team could get back on the right track. I don't know what that would look like for Chelsea. That is not going to help anything. The new manager will come and struggle as well. Because you know where Chelsea are right now? Is that they have players that have been brought in by multiple different managers across multiple years for multiple different systems and roles. So any new manager that comes in now, and guess what? A new manager is going to come in and want his own players to have his own idea of what players I would like for my system as well. But you have all these high profile, big money signing players to deal with. He also have the players that actually, you know, looking kind of decent, but might not be high profile. But because they're looking decent, you want to play them too. And then he have his own idea of the players that he wants to bring into the club to have his system work. And you know what has happened? It has all failed. And in 9 months, it repeats again with a new manager. And that is where it seems like Chelsea are at. And that is a very difficult thing to fix. At a point in time, that's kind of where United felt like they were at too. I would not say that they have fixed their situation either. So yeah. Looking forward, it's looking kind of bleak for Chelsea. But I'm sure that there are much smarter people out there than me that would know how to fix this thing. And hopefully one of those people, you know, come across the Chelsea situation. But I was going to say that I would actually like to hear what Brandon would have to say about this. Given that is the club that he supports, how would you start to fix this team? Because me personally, I don't know.
Bro, I think that the squad of players is much better than where we are and how we perform. I think it has a lot to do with the manager, and I've said this from before. The reason I did not like Poch is because I think we need an authoritative manager and one who has an authoritative style rather than Poch. I think Poch is too nice, and I think that is not what the team needs. The team needs somebody to guide them properly and individually. I don't think Poch is that kind of person. And that's just how I feel. I felt the same way about Potter, and I feel the same way about Poch. That's why I think Tuchel was at the start of all of this. Some people wanted Tuchel back, and in hindsight, it was not a very good idea based on what's happened now. But the kind of authoritative style, I think we need.
He's still got aura about him.
I don't think it's aura, but I think it's like you need a coach who is so strict and so serious about everything that it would actually work. Because I don't think Poch is the kind of guy to figure it out, and I don't think he's the kind of fella to put the type of pressure on the players that they need in order to thrive. Yeah, go ahead.
Is part of that because of how, not just young, but inexperienced that the squad is, and not just inexperienced in their careers, but like, in experience and understanding whatever the culture Chelsea is supposed to be, is that you need somebody to be that disciplined and authoritative.
Well, I just think that's what we need. We need somebody to start to be the figure, because we haven't had a figurehead of the new regime. Like Boehly hasn't had a figurehead manager since, and they all thought it was going to be Poch, and I don't think it will be Poch because he's just not authoritative. And we need somebody who's like that. I think that's all it really is, you know. Like I kind of disagree with people who say that the squad isn't good enough. Like, what is the average age of Arsenal, John?
I think now it's about, it's 25.6, something like that.
Right, 25 point something, right? That's very, that's relatively young, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It and is. I mean, oh, a few years ago, that's relatively young. Like, we should be performing at a level much higher than where we are at. And I just think it lands in his lap. Everything that's happened, even today, it's because of him. It's because of him. Everything has happened today, and the reason we've lost is because of him. Like, he brought on Chalobah against City, and we conceded. He brought on Chalobah again this week. We conceded. I don't know when he's gonna get the memo. I don't know when he's gonna figure it out. But I think that is where we are at right now. Because we're not gonna change the players that we've signed for eight years. We're not gonna change the regime. We're not gonna change the owners. So there's only one thing to change. I don't like the fact that we have to change it, but that is what we need to do. We need to change the manager. It's terrible choosing at this.
My question to that, like just as a quick follow up, is I agree that you need to change your manager. I'm not sure if there's anyone in the world that could come in and fix the team though. And that's kind of where I stuck, because Choose how do you come in?
Jose?
Nah, boy, nah.
I'm not ready for that.
You get more anywhere else, and I turns up somebody.
Look, nah, no, he's the type of man to come in, pick a fight with Cole Palmer 2 days later, and then fucking sell him or something.
I mean, it probably within his realms. I didn't see it, no, but I mean, he does have a history of one, being disciplined, and two, at least in places that he's loved, does get the squad to run through a wall for him. And even if the players really have that autonomy towards him, yet if they ever will, if there's one thing for damn sure, Chelsea as a club have that for him. You know? Now, obviously, not bullying him, but the fans, they have that for him.
Yeah.
And they would, the fans just have a way of transferring energy, and they will transfer that energy to the players, you know? And I didn't say this ideally, no. Obviously, it has not gone that well for Roma across the entire time. He still won Roma, the only trophy in 20 years, and still left there with actually the fans loving him and not wanting him to leave.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that he's washed or anything like that. I still think he has a purpose as well. But if it is to stabilize Chelsea, at least.
I was about to say that soon, because it might not be a long-term solution, but I honestly feel if you put Mourinho in that side now, he will stabilize the team, and he will definitely put a spotlight on either players who don't want to play for the club or not given 100%. Because one thing you can guarantee with Mourinho is he will find the bunch who will play for him and play for the team.
So I'm glad you say that, right, Virgil? Because this is my new eternal question for football fans, right? It's like, with the current squad of players that you have, what do you think is their ceiling in any 3 year span, right? Especially now, like in the next 3 years, where do you see the squad of players? Like, how high do you think they could go? Right? That's how I look at as everybody does. Like, I've asked John this many times. Because this is why I disagree with his love for Arteta. Like, if you could, I think the Chelsea squad is good enough to in the next 3 years to win a Premier League and to make it very far in our Champions
League. Very true.
Consider if we ever meet it, right? And if you're not meeting that expectation at any point in time, that have to be because of the manager. Because I've already made my mind up on the squad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know what the squad is. I know what the squad could get to. So, like, I don't know how old is he. Like, what? Like,
if with Jackson, I just had a striker.
Bro, I actually think with a proper manager, we could easily be in a title race. I truly believe that. The players these players are not bad. I guarantee you they're not bad. I guarantee you that they are good players.
Dog, credit where due. At the start of the season, Virgil had Chelsea second. I had them third. You know, Patrick also had them third. So it's not even saying we had them that far from it. You know. So,
but would you say that's more from the players or from the manager?
No, I agree. I think it's Poch's issue. Players, I think it's
players.
Oh, he said players. I say this.
No, 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 no. I meant I had them up there because of what I think the players
could have. Yes, yes.
This would never be like an exact comparison. But every single time I look at Chelsea and the type of and the young players that they have, I always look at Leverkusen and look at Bamini, look at Leipzig. I'm like, it have a few names in Leipzig, and if you're looking at it and looking at Chelsea side, they have a lot of talented players that if he was to take that Chelsea side and put them in like Leipzig, trust and believe them could, you know, obviously the league and everything different, but I just feel that from everything, you could look at players and say whatever, but the players that in that Chelsea side, they have the talent, they have the skill. We look at somebody like Caicedo, who was everybody was talking about him when he was at Brighton. Just you tell me, just one good manager for a short term time, can't look at Caicedo and get Caicedo to play like that, and have it with Enzo. Just them two alone, them two alone could change that Chelsea side completely if both of them play.
But Virgil, I feel like what you're saying kind of is a testament to it goes beyond players and managers for why a team underperforms. Because I agree that you could take this Chelsea team, copy and paste them to Leverkusen, and they probably win the league. Probably. I don't know. It depends how Bayern feeling. But you get what I'm saying, right? You could copy and paste this team, put them over there, they might win the league under that badge and that manager and that club and so on. But I don't think that you could bring Xabi Alonso to Chelsea and he wins the league. If you see what I'm saying. I think there's more issues that just runs deeper than
inherent at we see. Chelsea as a club right now, then.
Not even inherent. I just think like it had too much chaos going on at the club. The club itself unsettled. If you see what I'm saying. Also,
I do say the club is unsettled.
Me personally, I just rarely look into the time that a player was bought now. But like, you don't just buy a player. Okay, there are so many factors that go into buying a player, but our main thing is always going to come back to the system, right? We buy a player for a specific system. I always feel like it is a problem when you have multiple players from multiple eras, from multiple different managers. That, to me, is just always going to be a recipe for disaster because you have this one who came to play in a 3-4-3 under Tuchel, and you have this one who came to be the explosive winger that we're going to hit them on the counters, and then you have this one who came to be the tiki-taka guy because now the new manager wants to keep the ball. And it's like it's a bunch of different players that came for different things under different people with different environments, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I agree that Poch needs to leave. That's one thing that I'm 100% on. But everything else, I don't think Pep could come and fix this team, is what I'm trying to say. Like, I don't think Klopp could come and fix the team either. I think it's going to take more than that. Like, if it have to be getting rid of certain men, it might have to be that. If it have to be getting the entire backroom staff to change, it might have to be that.
But you do think that Klopp or Pep, given that they had the squad at the start of the season, they would be higher than where they are now, even if all players aren't reaching their full potential?
Yes, obviously. They would be higher. They might be in the top four, maybe. Or top five. I don't know. I'm guessing. But yes, I expect them to have been higher with better coaching. But I still don't think that's their full potential. Mm-hmm. If you see what I say. I don't think Pep comes and fixes it in two seasons. I think it's just too much to fix.
No, sure, yeah.
I actually disagree with that. Because I think, like... Because I know you've said this before, right? Like, you think that Chelsea is built for the back three, right? Like, you think so.
Yeah.
Right. I think if we had a manager who came in to play... Because, John, I know you've said this before, and I hate that this is true, but you've told me that you also think we're built for the back three, and I told you that bringing Poch means that we're going away from that. Like, do you remember us having that conversation? Like if we get Poch, I don't know if John stuck? No, he's not. Yeah.
John, you froze, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I hear and all that. I would like to think I hear.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, are you all here? Yeah.
Yeah.
But for a tiny second, I wasn't here at all.
So John has told me that he thinks Chelsea's also built for the back three, and I think bringing Poch in means that we're moving away from that.
Oh, boy.
Now, the fact that the squad is built in such a way I think going back to the back three might be the best course of action. So, like, I think that if you brought in somebody like Inzaghi, for example, I think it would work. I think somebody like Simeone would work. That fits both criteria of what we're all trying to say. And it's just not, Poch is not the type of person. Mm-hmm. I actually don't think it's as complicated as Daniel thinks. I don't think it's that bad. I really don't think it's that bad. I just think the club has never found a flagship person to take over the managerial role. And once we find that will be the ideal thing. Because we have players that can play multiple systems. You just need to find the best system and a good manager to do it. I think Potter was great. Like, we need a low-key type of manager just so that people don't expect a lot from us, and we slowly grind it up. But the thing is, Potter was not the ideal thing. It was the right idea, but it's the wrong person. So find something like that, and we'll get back there.
The other thing to add that would be difficult is looking at those managers that could come out of Chelsea. The tough thing is Chelsea kind of have to ride it out till the end of the season because you can't bring nobody in now. So that thing is when the end of the season come to convince somebody to come with wherever Chelsea finish, that's a battle in itself.
That's the thing, guys. We even talk about the fact that United lost this weekend.
But I stand that
Barca started to find their footing. That they actually went away to Napoli and did a decent account of themselves until they...
Well, hold on. About that decent
account. Wait, how
low is it not decent standard? What the bar for that decent fall?
Well, right. The bar was not high for Xavi before. So, and the fact that Leo scored a big game. Hey! It's something.
Dog, and it's where Jude dog, that was a nice goal.
Dog, that was a great goal.
I'll give him that one.
Like, and you know how everybody had his favorite finishes? And I didn't think about this before. This is actually one of my favorite finishes when strikers, like, take that touch, separate, and then finish it through a defender leg to score, dog. Like, that is looks so good, dog. And credit to where I do, the man do that. And then... Oh, see, man, I'll put someone in the ground and score. But we ain't reached there yet. We haven't reached there yet. Who to ask this for? A million injuries piling up for Liverpool. On a scale of 1 to 10, is anybody worried? Especially as we head into, you know, Klopp has spoken openly that he wants to win Europa League. And just saw Europa League knockouts are going to start back. I'm thinking a week, 2 weeks, a week, 2 weeks. They have the two rounds to play before the knockouts, though. And I already read the whole injury list for you. Before at least the first international break, they have to go to Nottingham Forest. They have to host Man City. And then they have to go to Everton. And amongst the Europa League tie, whoever it may be, I'll be honest, I don't know who it is. On a scale of 1 to 10, guys, is anybody worried about a Liverpool drop-off? I am going to go with my worry scale, with 10 being very worried, 1 being not worried at all. At about a 4. Because logic dictates that I should be worried about them. However, Liverpool logic dictates that they will be completely fine and find a way. So, I'll go at a 4. A little bit less on you. Like, probably the correct answer would have been 5 by my logic. But we'll go with 4. So, yeah. Brandon.
I'll give it a 3. Especially after.
Yeah, we were less worried. Brad, Patrick.
I'm a 5.
Hey, we're more worried. Virgil.
Wait.
Before I answer. Just now. How you going to feel when you go to Anfield and you lose 1-0 to a side started with Bobby Clark, James McConnell, Jaden Daz, Gerald Kwanza, and Connor Bradley starting in it, boy? And you lost a grimy 1-0.
The one thing Man City loves to do is make names for players. So I would not be surprised if somebody comes there, kickstart their career, then get a nice brand deal with some boots, and then their life going to be, you know, uphill from there. So I'm not surprised. But going back to the
I feel the correct answer, Virgil, is that if them start them, man, then by rights. Yeah, let's start the Micah fella. Yeah, start off with Oscar Bob.
Hey, no.
It'll be like, if you want to go low, we'll go low.
I don't care. Yeah. Hey, we could. I, I just want to win at Anfield.
No, Bob Bardo. I like.
I want to win at Anfield while Klopp there. If you if when Klopp when we don't win at Anfield, it don't count. I don't care who come in, it just don't count anymore. But the worry scale, as the thing is, I would like to put a little doubt in a doubt in the universe, but that worry scale on 3 because
they go they as well. And I'm going to Jesse on Yuan's behalf. Bro is a 9 out of 10. We have no players. Nobody is fit. Bro, injuries.
He's uncomfortable, Dan. Bro. Look.
He looked real good today, boy. I was very surprised.
He looked like if you that's where he and Connor Bradley been playing the whole season with Liverpool at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually amazing.
Bro, Liverpool okay, guys. Fans are the Come worst, on. Dog. They live literally at the worst.
You
they
have literally
no all of them. They literally have been worried all season, and they are
first
in the league, and they just won their first trophy. Their first available trophy. Like, please give us a break, please.
Yeah. With that being said, guys, we're gonna go across to Liverpool's biggest fans in Manchester United as they lost 2-1 to Fulham at home. And it was a great end for the Highlanders because obviously the Highlanders scored this weekend 2 in the Arsenal Newcastle game. Then a Highlander put the dagger to RB Leipzig in Harry Kane. And then a Highlander put it to United in Alex Iwobi. So, the bigger news though is that Rasmus Højlund, who has been in ripping form, he's the youngest player to achieve 6 goals in 6 games. Is unfortunately out until the international break, which obviously meant that he missed the game this weekend. So obviously, Marcus Rashford took up what was his preferred position when he was in form 2 years ago in strike. And was that really something game? I'll be honest, I didn't even want to watch his game. It just didn't have nothing better on. But yeah. Brandon, what was your thoughts, bro? 2 Nigerians score, by the way. And BC and Iwobi. They could have probably do that in the AFCON final. So, it might help.
You know, John, it's almost as if Man United don't score enough goals.
Enough goals.
Almost as if they don't score enough goals. Bro,
I genuinely would like if we could if we could do some kind of stat count at the end of the season, right? And like how much percentage of goals United have compared to the rest of the league from their midfielders go back of their total goals compared to the rest of the league. Because it's actually insane how they do manage to find just enough goals to keep going from McTominay, Casemiro, Maguire, whoever you want to count it from. But yeah.
Yeah, bro, they just don't. I don't know, boy. I kind of felt, and they were home too, eh? Like, this is not like they were away to Fulham. They were home to Fulham. Again, another Bruno Fernandes stinker. Another terrible performance by Marcus Rashford. I don't know where United are going from here. I think people say, you know what, Ten Hag out. People say get some of these players out. Or I say get rid of both of them because they're no good. None of them good.
Yeah.
Like, they're just not good anymore. Boy. I'll keep it very short and say to United. I don't know how the hell they lost that game. They should not have lost that game. But again, somehow they're sixth. Is it 6-7?
They are 6. Tottenham have a game in hand, obviously, because Tottenham was supposed to play Chelsea this weekend.
Like, I don't know how they 6.
So Tottenham, if they actually won, they would have won level with points on Tottenham. Obviously, they would not have overtaken Tottenham because their goal difference is 0. Like, that in itself is a remarkable thing.
Wait, hold on, John. Hold on. I'm glad you bring that up because I have this statistic here for you. This is a secret. Hold on, fellas. I get it. Right, so I would like each of you to give me a team that you think has scored fewer goals than Manchester United this season in the league. Virgil, go first.
That scored fewer goals than them? Who?
Yeah,
just get one team, right?
Any team. Yeah, it have a few, so all again, a chance each. Keep going. Go, give me one. Right, good. That's correct. Daniel, give me my next one.
That's so, Fulham.
Fulham are tied with the number of goals that Manchester United have. So, incorrect. John, give me one.
Burnley.
That is correct. Virgil, you go.
Everton.
Correct. Daniel, go.
Ooh. Forest.
Correct. Not Forest. John, go.
Palace.
Correct, Virgil. It's only have two more.
Brentford.
I lie. It have two more after that. Correct. It have two more after that. Daniel. Close it out. Have a very obvious one on it. Didn't say yet.
Luton?
Oh, Luton.
Right, okay. John, last one. Come, take me home. Take me home. Take me home.
Somebody say Forest, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What has been said so far? Correct. Bournemouth, yeah. So those are all the teams that have scored fewer goals than Manchester United this season.
Yeah, boy. Hey, good company to be in, so...
That's horrible company to be in, though.
That is, that's horrendous. Dog. And I mean... And you know what's the funny thing, yeah? Full of real throw in that game to it. That fella who played on top for them, boy, is Muniz. Muniz?
Mm-hmm.
Bro.
Muniz.
No, he had like three good chances in the first
half. I like him.
Dog, I can't lie. He have a thing
about him.
Dog, the third one he have, he opened the body, take the touch and just hit it around the corner. He smacked the post. It's like, wait, boy, I love them, boy. But,
How you bad, boy?
Yeah, boy, so...
How Wolves scoring so much goals, dog?
Because Brandon...
Last season, that was our guaranteed clean sheet, boy.
True. And they also have Pablo Sarabia, who step up, apparently. And you know what's the thing, right? You know, all the teams that feel like they had things to complain about with injuries, you know, Wolves actually have players that come back.
Yeah, yeah.
All the players are Wolves that had injured, you know, in and out, and yet they keep managing to find goals, boy. Hey, fair play to Gary O'Neill, boy, like for real, boy. This man is doing a sensational job with them. Mm-hmm. But with Manchester United, so if they actually won that game, they would have gone tied with fifth. But yeah, obviously that didn't happen. So looking forward for Manchester United now. Obviously, we know that they have to play Man City in a few weeks, but in the more recent future for them, because obviously they don't have no Europe. They have to play, sorry, not a few weeks. They have to play City Sunday coming, which is truly great. Then they have to host Everton and host Sheffield. But you know what's the thing? With this United team, you never know where you're going and get. So I think when the father Rasmus Højlund is out, actually, like they've been really serious for a second, I think Højlund was doing well to cover up a lot of sins over the last few weeks for them. And with him being out, I kind of really had that much hope for them again. I kind of feel like these next three games here, they could drop some points that would be really crucial for them in trying to put together an end-of-season run to try and make that Champions League spot. I'm not sure if Ole feel any different, or you'll tell me when. There's Ole to the top, obviously. But, yeah, that's kind of how I feel with them. Rashford on 5 goals this season. Truly great. Supposed to be the greatest counter-attacking player in the world. And all he doing is countering all the people who had any arguments of him being very good. So,
counter the supporters.
Yeah. Not a nice thing to do, really and truly. How do you feel with United? They're going to the Etihad next week, and I'll be honest, I know they're not scoring really at a free flow rate. I feel like if it's any game, Ole might re-catch Ole Mojo. Might be this weekend.
There's a reason why De Bruyne taking his time. De Bruyne is starting that game. Everybody starts.
De Bruyne is starting that game with a bad mind. Fair, I hear it. Okay. No problem. All right, Ole. Let me ask Ole over and under, right? So... I'm going to do this maths real quick because, you know, you don't have any green maths, right? So, United on 44 points, right? And it have 12 games remaining in this season. So, it's 36 points available, right? Over, under, that they get 25 points out of the remaining 36 games. Now, why 25? It's because 25 will put them on 69 points, which has historically been enough to get your Champions League spot. So... Over under 25 from Manchester United. Virgil.
So they're under 25.
Okay. Brandon.
Over 25, boy. 12 games. With City in there. They play Liverpool twice. Yeah.
They still have to play Liverpool.
Do they still have to play like all of the big teams?
Yep. Very correct. Yep. Only Tottenham they got to play twice.
Damn, I'll go under, boy. Damn.
Exactly.
Patrick.
I also think it's under.
Nice. Okay. My answer was under.
Just to sum up real quick, we see when you talk about United and Champions League, if you're relying on Kobbie Mainoo, a man who now burst on the scene when you have all these players in your team.
Scott McTominay is their best player.
Compare them to Aston Villa. Aston Villa is playing much better football than United.
Look, hey, I brought in Leon Bailey this weekend.
Aston Villa have even players. Aston Villa beat United in every realm. Goals, assists, players' contribution, a manager that makes sense. Yeah. Players who looking fresh outside of football and just get better haircuts than them United players. Aston Villa have everything.
Freshness is our metric now.
Yo, they sell Pogba now. They expected freshness went down.
Nah, for real.
So, over on the 19 points. Let me go in reverse order. Ooh. Patrick.
Nah, they could... Yeah, more...
You can't go equal, eh?
Yeah, more than 19. More than 19.
More than 19. Virgil.
Yeah, more than 19. They can't be so bad.
Yeah.
Patrick, so more than, Salik, so more than 19 means that you expect them to at least win 6 and draw 2 of their remaining 12 games, yeah? At least. Because over 19 would mean 20 over.
I'm not because they still have Chelsea to play, they have Liverpool to play, they have Newcastle to play. I'm not gonna count that.
They have Arsenal to play,
they have Brighton to play. And they have Brighton.
Yeah. No, but the thing is they can't. I can't be surprised if they beat like one or two of them teams.
Somehow they just kind of
team that just don't make sense. Yeah.
No, I let me tell you, yeah. This is a mildly serious point, but it's still a serious point. Saying that United is the exact team that their fans need. You know? They just do just their players as well, and Ten Hag as well, do just enough to keep everybody happy. And they keep the gravy train rolling just enough so that they don't question anything. Come the end of the season now. They might actually end up putting up just enough points, not performances, eh? Because we all know the good performances now is over under 5, and the answer is under 5. Come the end of the season. But they'll manage to put up enough points that he will be in and around Europe. And because they'll be like, well, you know, he any season is strong and a new ownership and Hoyland's a little good coming on the end of the season. And they'll find out enough good enough points to negate all the bad. Then come next season, they'll leave him in charge. And they'll go and recruit more Ajax friends and family just come players. And then now, when next season come now, and it's some of the problems start to pop up again, they will restart the whole cycle again. Which is why they keep doing the cycle over and over. Whether it's Ten Hag, or it's Van Gaal, or it's Mourinho, or it's Eric Ten Hag, or what's the other one name? Ole.
Ole?
Yeah. You know, because it's the same players, it's the same inconsistent players, right through. So, yeah. My over under 19 is under. Because, yeah, I think I'll be like 17 though. I'm gonna be like 17.
I can't say equal.
Shucks. I say 17. Maybe 18. Maybe they'll get 5 draws, 3 losses. Sorry, 5 wins, 3 draws.
I'm going for the over with 20. I'm going with 20.
Hey, okay, cool. Nice, guys. Moving on. So, yeah, I feel like that's enough for the Prem. Or you want to say anything else about the Prem? Mm-hmm. Newcastle fall of this season has been one to watch. Truly lovely.
It really has.
Yep.
Yeah. Who knew going into a Champions League season with Danny Murphy and them kind of men being escorted up?
I wonder who told me that.
That person is a pain in my ass. Moving along. He knows I love him dearly. So, it almost was a 12-point gap in a 34-game season in Bundesliga this weekend. But when you need big players to step up, they step up. And Harry Harrell again scored twice as Bayern beat RB Leipzig 2-1, right? So, he kept the point gap to 8, I believe it is, right? However, guys, the more important thing is not that he scored, but Granit Xhaka scored his first goal for Bayer Leverkusen this week, and it was a rocket. The man scored up. And then he do the fake hamstring celebration.
Yeah, that was funny.
I don't know if all you see the cut that it had to Xabi Alonso. Like, he actually had Xabi Alonso a little worried for a second. And, yeah. And he thought he might not have something. But Pat, I know he wasn't here last week, so we kind of went in on Harry Kane a bit, right? But and obviously, I do get that, obviously, like, you know, Harry Kane cannot be excused for the fact that Upamecano's skill set is where it is and whatever the deficiencies that the team have. But I do think that there have been times in some of these games that they are losing that he can be doing a lot more. What is the scenario then for you for him to save face this weekend, this season, sorry, going forward?
Big man thing, dog. And it's going to be difficult, but I think Bayern need to win the Bundesliga. They need to find a way. Again, it's looking impossible, but it's like, dog, what you said was save face, you know.
Yeah.
There's not, he can't run away from facts. The fact is going to be, and forget about what the reasons is, the fact is going to be that he joined Bayern and they lost the league off rip. That's going to be the fact. So the only way for him to save face and to not have multiple haters making multiple memes on an hourly basis will be to win the damn league. He had to find a way, dog. I don't know how he can do that. I don't know how Bayern going to do that. I need to stop saying him. I don't know how Bayern are going to figure out this pickle that they found themselves in. But I also will not be surprised if Leverkusen goes on a five-game losing streak at the last five games of the season and dog the league. Because somehow that has happened in that league. True. Somehow. Right? So,
I mean,
so yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. Been undefeated for the season. But, like...
Dog, and I still wouldn't be surprised. Look, it's not going to happen. Right?
Is it then more realistic then that he on his own can turn the Lazio tie and then... Let me say that at least they make the final then where he carried them through the... even if they don't win it all, if they don't win it all, but he carried them, that he turned around this tie, carried them through the quarters, knock out somebody big in the semifinals, all on his back.
But if I'm being honest, dog, I don't think people want to hear that. Unless he win the Champions League, but I don't think Bayern going to win the Champions League.
Yeah.
I don't think people want to hear none of that, dog. He could score 95 goals this season. And I still don't think people want to hear that. It just... going to look real bad if as soon as he joined Bayern, they lose the league. Because Bayern don't lose that league.
Yeah.
Like, ever. So, you know, it's going to look horrible, dog.
Yeah.
And I don't even think it would matter if he come and win it again the second season.
Yeah.
People just going to be like, dog, don't forget what you do, you know.
Forget about that one. I do hear all the arguments about, but it's going to be a long pod, but I do hear all the arguments about, you know, it was an agent Bayern team or whatever, but hey, when the season started, obviously Kane started off hot, right? Sané and Coman was also on fire. Everyone of the best midfield talents in the world in Musiala played. I know obviously that Tuchel and Kimmich had a beef. They also signed somebody that we all had unanimously agree was the best defender of 2023 in Kimmich. And stuff like that. So it's not like, and as much as, you know, Bayern are doing extremely well, Leverkusen are doing extremely well, and not to take anything away from them. But it's not just like their squad and their coach is so elite and above all and are doing something so miraculous that, you know, Bayern shouldn't at the very least be closer, you know?
Dog, I don't watch the Bundesliga week in, week out, okay? So I haven't seen all of Bayern games. I wouldn't sit here and say that I did. But I've seen fans' reactions to Kane, and according to them, the man doing the most. However, I've seen something different with my own eyes when I watch them in the Champions League. I don't find them playing good football. I don't find them playing good at all. I don't find they're not doing anything sustainable. They don't seem to have attacking patterns ideas going forward.
I saw somebody say that how they find, like, whenever the game gets tough, Kane just go from playing striker to playing DM.
I could see that. And I could see how that would have worked at the start of the season when Coman and Ting were fit and firing. But that's probably not what they need, you know, right now. But hey, that's what he's done for like the last 10 years. So it could be kinda hard to beat that out of somebody. Anyway, all I'm going to say is that men didn't look good against Lazio. They haven't looked good in the Champions League at all, in my opinion. And mm-hmm. I don't watch that many Bundesliga games. So I can't see how they look in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
But from what I've seen, them looking like real shit, dog. Like real liquid shit. I don't think he could save face right now. It's tough for him.
Virgil, I know he's a key in here, though. You want to say anything?
Yeah, just like what Patrick said, I'd agree with that, because we can't say nothing with Champions League, because if that happens, it's a miracle. And for the league, they just sit on right now and find a way to cut that tie right now and, you know, try and push for that first. Because if we thought things would have been bad if they had lose any last day to Dortmund, and we already see how some Bayern fans had a meltdown, if that almost happened, the manner in which they would lose this league and having Kane will be very embarrassing. And it's not a simple scene of, okay, we could go out and recruit. They have a lot of world class players in vital positions. So
that's why
really you're not going to look at the other players. There's nowhere for Kane to hide. Yeah. What are they going to say? What is it? Kane need a partner now? We're going to say our big signing.
We're going to sign some next summer.
After something.
But my question, right, is it kind of just down to Tuchel then? Because the squad is talented. But they ain't looking good.
I do think that there are some problems. Like, I don't think that they have a natural, well, he wants a natural six, and I don't think that to play whatever system that he wants, and I don't think that there was that in the squad. For a while they had issues at right back, because I don't think Mazraoui was fit, and I don't think Kimmich wanted to play right back. So I think all that was issues, and I don't think Davies was fit either. I think there was a lot of injuries this year. I'm not saying no, but I'm not doubting that there have been injuries in other seasons with Bayern, and we haven't heard about it because they managed to win regardless, and it just hasn't happened this season. Before we move across to La Liga, you all are aware that, like, Dortmund just is a funny club.
And they're still in fourth for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it would be much more.
This is why it's can't take the Bundesliga serious at all, because, dog, I like to be fair to Piet, dog. It was just blasted till man was serious about life, dog. PSV could have been like 3-1 up to Dortmund in that time. Brandon, I didn't really ask you about this because I know last week me and you get to go kind of more in depth on this. I know if you have anything you wanted to add about the Kane Bayern thing, or I'll just move across to La Liga.
No, I don't have anything to add. I mean,
yeah, I know we kind of do all this last week anyway. Now, so it's early change for right. Cool, La Liga. Brandon, not allowed to answer, guys. Y'all want to guess who in second in La Liga?
Is it not Barca?
It is Barcelona, and they are actually second in La Liga. Now, this is a question that Patrick can't answer. Patrick, is it a rule in La Liga that Girona plays on a Monday every week? Because I feel like every week Girona's playing on a Monday.
I feel so too.
It might be.
Girona have a game in hand because they play in the day after we are recording. But Barca is second after they won 4-0 yesterday. Against Getafe, I believe those years, Getafe, when Patrick favorite player, João Felix, scored. But that is minor. Pats, or they went to the Diego Maradona Stadium, all it threw one all. You know, it was the Maradona Derby here. Lewandowski scored in a big game, or they had the lead. It wasn't Araujo. It wasn't Christensen either. Who it was? It was Inigo Martinez. He fell down. Osimhen score. But all it was away from home in Champions League, and it was 1-1. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think that's a real disappointment, in my opinion, for how the game started. I don't know if you got to catch the first half, but in the first half, we really punked them, dog. We really and truly punked them.
I was
surprised.
I said, that's what I said. I thought it was a good performance. You know, I thought it played pretty well.
Yeah. No, that's the reason why it's disappointing.
Yeah.
I would have probably been less disappointed if we went and looked like real shit and come out 1-0.
Yeah.
Like, lost 1-0. That's not that disappointing because I didn't really have much to go on from the get-go. Yeah. But they go on there and they're playing good, dog. So it's like, and hey, might get something out of this one, dog. Yeah. Might really get something out of this one. But honestly, dog, this is where you just see that Yamal really is 16 years old, right? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why they didn't go with Rafinha. Mm. I felt like he would have suited that game. Just a little bit more experience now, right? Because Yamal does really make some weird decisions, I find. Again, he's 16, so I'm cool with it. But he's made some weird decisions in the attacking third, I find. Like, dog, not everything is a let me dribble and score, you know? Like, not everything is that. Especially, like, okay, I'll just put it like this, right? If you're going to deny cutting the ball across to Lewa, you better score then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You better score. And he's not doing either. So, I would have preferred if Rafinha started that game. I think the first half would have gone much differently. I was somewhat disappointed getting to the first half at 0-0 because I really felt like the team should have got something out of that first half. They didn't. Lewandowski scored a really nice goal. I was happy, celebrate, you know, fist pump, take a Snapchat, them type of things, right? And then, like, moments later, another bad decision, another inexperienced decision, I would say. And Inigo Martinez, in my opinion, for no reason, tries to win a ball that didn't really need to be won. I mean, we're talking about the man is back to goal, okay? And the ball is being zipped in.
Yeah.
How did you plan on winning that? Yeah. You know what I mean? How did you plan on intercepting that? It's being zipped in.
Yeah.
What was the plan? I don't know what the plan was. I don't know. Has he done? Does he do that in training on a regular or something? I don't know. Does he somehow intercept these balls being zipped into strikers' feet, like getting around it? He's back to goal, dog. Like, he's back to goal. His back is to the goal. What was the plan? How were you going to do that? I don't know how in the hell he was going to do that. But he had a plan. All right, so he said, all right, boom, interception. And with this interception, man of the match. Well, yeah. It didn't work out like that.
And it's like Osimhen, because tiny fella either.
Dog, that was it. But anyhow, he slipped because he was wearing the wrong boots. Because obviously, you know, these men don't see. And yeah, Osimhen too, man. It was a nice finish, I would say.
Yeah.
Half expected to stay and to save it because he's superhuman. Yeah. But yeah, nah, man, it was a nice finish.
How you feel about
1-1?
Midfield.
Awful. That's not a midfielder. Because the... But I think there's a lot of things to pick apart in that. With centre-backs going into midfield, it's very difficult. There's really only a handful of centre-backs that could do that. And I will just give you the main reason for that is when you're playing centre-back, everything is front-facing, right?
Yeah.
John Hughes plays centre-back in real life, so you know this. Not sure about everybody else and where you like to play and stuff. But when you play centre-back, everything is front-facing. You never have to deal with back pressure, okay?
Yeah.
As soon as you move up a line, it's completely different now. Yeah. Now you have to deal with back pressure. You have to scan over your shoulders now. You're not center back. You don't really have to do that one so much. Mm-hmm. Everything, again, is front facing, right? Your whole world changes when you go up a line. And I think that's exactly what happened to Christensen. It's a case of, yeah, boss, I could play there, you know. And then playing there is like a whole different
thing. Different dynamic.
I think that's kind of what happened with him. Looking on to the second tie, though, definitely in our favor, but at the same time,
you never know.
Again,
yeah.
The reason you don't know is because, first of all, we have to win. It's not about, like, if it was 1-0, totally different situation. Now we have to win because it's 1-1. Secondly, we are very bad at playing against fast players, and Napoli has very fast players. I thought we did good to kind of nullify Kvaratskhelia on the day. But this is going to be a different day. So, who knows, again, he might have a worldie. And this is a guy that could do that. So, yes, I am worried about him and Osimhen. Yes, I am worried about our attacking patterns. How are we going to score? I honestly don't know. I could never tell you how we're going to score. I hope Felix play on the day, even though I'm a big-time hater. I hope Rafinha plays on the day too. And we're going to need Lewandowski to do another one of those. But yeah. Apart from that, I guess it's slightly in our favor. Yeah.
I want us to start a wrap up. So, to all the other, yeah, like, 30, 40, 40 seconds each.
Oh, well, my bad, fellas. My bad, fellas.
No, it's fine. Use it, Barca fan, though. Yeah, that was very good. And then I love them could have provide the kind of input you did just now, bro. That's completely fine.
Yeah.
Brandon, how you felt about that Barca game?
I said it. I think this is going to be the tie where we would wish away goals was a thing.
Yeah.
So based on the first leg, I think this is going to be another draw in the camp. However, it'll be a high scoring draw. I agree with Daniel. They peppered them in the first half. They should have scored. But you know, in the end, Napoli came back and they I don't think they played well. I don't think Barca played well. So if both of them on their game in the second leg, it'll be very interesting. So I'll go for I'll be nice. 3-3. And he can't.
I like it.
Cool. Nice. Is there anything important to talk about in this weekend? I hope he actually went down today, but yeah, I didn't check to see if they actually
finished. I finished 1-1.
Okay, I don't know. So Leal scored a great goal today for his fourth goal of the campaign, which, bro, that's the thing with Leal, you know? Like, his numbers has never actually been that good, you know? But when he does score, it's been some really nice ones. 175 million, guys, that is his release clause. So, PSG, you know, that would be good. Osimhen missed our open goal today twice.
That's what I like to hear. That's the type of things I like to hear, man. Yes, keep it coming.
He did score, eh? But that was after a horrendous mistake. Like, don't get me wrong, eh? I really like Osimhen, eh? Like the idea of it, but the good Lord, boy. That was horrendous, indeed. Anything more interesting? Marseille 1-4-1 against Montpellier, which that doesn't really sound that interesting, right? But I just wanted to bring up Mudab Oba. You know, he's like doing extremely well in that league. Very happy for him. Don't screw up your face, so okay. That's so not necessary. Boo. Man, that's so sore. So yeah, guys. Anyway, we got cup action. So yeah. So I think we'll just hear from us at the weekend. And yeah, I think that's it. Anybody have anything you want to say? Or we can just wrap it up. Everybody good?
Very good.
Everybody good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah? Nice. Cool. Thank you guys for joining. Thank you guys for listening. I probably should not say this at the top of the pod, but I did hear you guys this week when you all said that y'all really appreciate when the pod is on YouTube. It is reflected in the viewership because, you know, last week, up until literally yesterday, I got messages from people saying that they really enjoyed the pod. This is going up on YouTube, same time with the pod. So thank you guys as always. Catch you guys next time. See you soon. Take it easy. Later.